The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
We're live, pal.
Hey, we're live, pal. Welcome back, everyone, to the A-Side Live Show here on MMAfighting.com. It's been, I think, 2 weeks since the last time we did this because I've obviously been in Fight Island traveling, and we've had weigh-ins, media days, fights, you name it, when we're supposed to be doing this. So we took about a 2 week break, but we're back now. I hope everyone missed us, but if you didn't, why? Anyway, to get to the point, you guys know the drill, questions, answers, all that. We're same format as always. Joining us this week, I was hoping to get someone on that was on Fight Island with me. So I turned to the man who I sat next to at every single media day and sat in front of at every single weigh-in, Chisanga of The Sun. Am I remembering that correctly?
Correct. That's correct. Thanks for having me on, guys. It's an honor.
Yeah, Chisanga Malata, of course, one of the top UK journalists in the MMA scene. He's done great work all week. Sat next to him, picked his brain, saw him write stories, all kinds of stuff. We shared iPhone chargers. We shared camera chargers. You name it. We probably had to share it this week, the last 2 weeks at on Fight Island. And, of course, Casey Lydon, producer extraordinaire on the ones and twos. Casey, how's Englewood?
Englewood is very good. It's very cold. I woke up this morning. It was 49 degrees. I was like,
oh, boy. What's that in Celsius?
What?
What's that in Celsius?
Yeah. Oh. What's that?
So that's not real Celsius. Come on, yeah. Man. This is America, man. We believe in freedom and Fahrenheit, man. Come on.
I had to get used to saying things in Celsius and all that kind of, and meters and everything, speaking with all the European journalists and stuff, or coaches too. They'd ask me like, oh, what's the weather in Arizona? I'd say like, oh, I guess up to 118. And they would just look at me like I was like, they're like, what does that even mean? And I had to like conversion and everything. But saying, how's the weather in the UK? Because Casey says it's cold. 49 is not even freezing, if you're not aware. So how's the weather in the UK?
On the day that we got back, I've even lost track of what day it was Sunday night. We got back and there was just snow everywhere, like just covered. And as soon as they opened the aircraft door, I could just see the chill coming through, and I was just like, this is just not what I was used to, because I was wearing shorts and everything still, like, because I packed in a rush because I still had deadlines to meet when I got back to the hotel. So literally, I just chucked on shorts and then I just went, and then the door opened when we arrived, and it was just cold as hell.
That's what I knew you were going to say, that because I saw like the Raptors from the Full Reptile team. They posted they were walking through snow, and when they got off, I had to drive through an ice storm between Vegas and Phoenix. So that was fun on the way back. Like 16-hour flight into a 4-hour drive through the snow. I survived. Oh, saw a bunch of car crashes, though, up in the mountains. It is what it is. No one wants to hear about that. But you guys know the drill. You can ask us any questions you want. Saying if you haven't seen the show before, we just answer fan questions about pretty much anything the fight fans want to watch. We talk mostly about fighting, but every now and then we get the random tangent. We had Mike Chiesa once on, and he spoke for about 45 minutes on Bigfoot and the lore behind that. So, yeah, we get all kinds of weird questions. So, Casey, without further ado, what's our first question?
First question. Get out of here, Jessica
Crystal. Oh, shout out to Jessica Crystal Crew. Long time comment.
All right, where are we going to go first? Let's start. Start with the big questions. People, when you submit questions online to us, make each question a post, because now we have these giant questions. I didn't feel like breaking them down.
We have giant blocks. So from Tristan Gordet on the site, I knew he to his credit, tweeted us this morning and said, last night, just a heads up, I'm going to have a bunch of questions. So I woke up this morning expecting a million questions from Sir Tristan. Anyway, McGregor's status as a contender, Dustin's place in UFC history, and Pena's call out of Nunes. So this is three different questions, so we'll start at the top. After reading AK Lee's article about McGregor, do you think his days as a legitimate UFC contender are behind him? So yes, of course, after we finish this episode of the A-Side, go to MAFighting.com and read our colleague Alex Kaylee's article on it. Well written, but just saying, I'll start with you. You and I were in attendance. We saw the Dustin Poirier's TKO of Conor McGregor live and in person. This is now his second loss at 155. He's, of course, beat Donald Cerrone, and sandwiched between that was his loss to Khabib and his loss to Dustin Poirier. So are McGregor's days as a legitimate UFC contender behind him after seeing last Saturday's performance?
No, I don't think so by any stretch of the imagination. I think I don't want to say that that's a casual question or a casual notion that's being perpetuated, but that is what I've been seeing from people who aren't really familiar and immersed in the sport. I mean, let's not forget, Conor won the first round, and he looked good in the first round. I mean, that left hand was landing early doors, and in the clinches as well, he reversed position very well, and he landed some good knees in the clinch. So I don't think by any stretch of the imagination that he's no longer a legitimate lightweight contender or title contender in any division. I think that's a grave disservice to Dustin Poirier for people to be saying that, because I think people are forgetting that Dustin Poirier, prior to fighting Conor, he'd beaten four former world champions: Anthony Pettis, Justin Gaethje, Eddie Alvarez, and who's the fifth one? Max Holloway. So
yeah,
I think Conor is still a world-class fighter. Obviously, the questions about him being a legitimate lightweight contender are, I think they were somewhat answered with the performance in the first round, but I think he needs an emphatic victory in his next fight to truly silence those people that are asking those questions.
Yeah, and I saw a question that I'm sure we're going to talk about later on actually it's this one right here. So as it stands today, can we say that Dustin Poirier is the second greatest lightweight fighter in UFC history? Is there any other fighter in the division that present or past that has a better resume than he does? The man has fought nothing but killers in the division. So going off of that, we actually were speaking of this in the airport a little bit amongst the media. A lot of us didn't really have a problem if you put Dustin Poirier number two, probably behind Khabib in terms of greatest lightweights of all time. So if Conor... If this is what we're going off of, if we put Dustin Poirier second greatest behind Khabib, that means the only people Conor's lost to at lightweight in the UFC are the first and second greatest lightweights of all time. So it's nothing to hang your head at, man. It's not like you're losing to bums. And of course, he beat Eddie Alvarez, who we all agree would probably be top five lightweights of all time in all of MMA. And then Donald Cerrone, of course, has pretty much every UFC record out there. But Casey, two-part question. Are Conor's days as a contender behind him? And where do you slot Poirier in the annals of great lightweights in MMA history?
Did you see those pay-per-view sales that Conor got? Yeah.
That's all that matters right now.
Yeah, that's all that matters. He could lose 30 times in a row. As long as he's selling a million pay-per-views, he will always be a lightweight title contender. I don't care. That's just how the business works. Will he win the belt ever again? I seriously doubt that, but he's still very... exciting, entertaining fighter. So yeah, we're gonna see him in title number one contender fights, probably another title fight, just because he beats someone outside the top 10. We'll see him there. The idea that he's not gonna be a top contender is kind of ridiculous. Now, being a champion, that's another story. But Conor Dustin Poirier, the second greatest lightweight ever, well, UFC history.
I don't have a problem with it. Like, he's interim champ, yeah. And he's like, look at, he's beating Eddie, he's beating Pettis, he's beating Gaethje, he's beating Holloway, he's beating Holloway twice. Mm-hmm. He has the draw, he's beating Jim Miller, like, but he has lost to Michael Johnson and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, he's rattled, he's like, but just to he's lost and then he's bounced back and ran through a string of killers. So, how you bounce back, I think, plays a major factor too. But I have no problem if you put him number two and maybe Tony Ferguson number three.
I feel
all those can bounce around. I think the only one that we know is one, but I think the story is still, I think the story isn't finished yet for Poirier and Ferguson, right. So and Connor, in fact. So and Chandler, freaking. It's like there's still so many stories that are still haven't gone to their final act yet as far as their career. Yeah. So I
like, and if Eddie wins the one, if Eddie Alvarez wins one championship title, then he has Bellator title, UFC title, mm-hmm. one championship title. Sure. Where I saw a question that I'm sure is coming up. RDA is probably somewhere in there. And I pulled up, we got the numbers right here on pay-per-view buys ever. So the highest selling pay-per-view of all time, UFC 229, Habib Connor did 2.4 million. And then Poirier McGregor did 1.6. Diaz McGregor 2 did 1.6. McGregor Cerrone did 1.3. McGregor Diaz did 1.3. Then Alvarez McGregor did 1.3. And then Usman Masvidal did 1.3. And Lesnar Mir did 1.3. So pretty much the top 6 to 5 slots are all involving Conor McGregor. So as long as that trend continues, he's going to be in the top of the division no matter what.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you on that.
And then the final question from Tristan, did Juliana Pena's call out of Nunes make sense? Don't think she was being realistic. It sounded like she was making excuses on her losses at the press conference. So for those of you who didn't watch the press conferences that are all on our YouTube channel, Juliana Pena beat Sarah McMahon, tapped her, and then immediately called out Amanda Nunes. A lot of people laughed. I didn't have a problem with the call out because you're not going to get what you don't ask for. Does the fight make sense? But I don't have a problem with any. I think Chael Sonnen said it best, like, you should be calling out the champ. I don't have a problem if anyone calls out the champ. She is coming off losses. She's had a bunch of losses. Amanda Nunes clapped back. Nina Ansaroff clapped back. Sanga, what did you make of Juliana Pena's call out of the champ, Amanda Nunes?
Like everyone else in attendance at the Etihad Arena, I was a bit perplexed, to be honest. But as you said there, you quoted Chael Sonnen that you don't get what you don't ask for. So, and you should be calling out the champion, but I struggle to see what claim to a title shot that she can have. Obviously, she's 2-2 in her last four, and then she had the lengthy layoff between the Shevchenko fight and the Montano fight. So she's not been that active. So, but don't get me wrong, would it be an entertaining fight? Yes, but I was perplexed, but not as perplexed as Amanda, who, as you said, clapped back with a tweet that banged pretty much and like was retweeted loads and liked loads of times. I think she said something along the lines of, you can't even make yourself a contender. So, I mean,
and
if she gets
Nina responded with twice, because apparently like Juliana lost to Valentina and then she lost to Jermaine Durandamy. I would assume if she won either of those fights, she probably would have got the title fight.
Yeah, that's true, 100%. Especially the random, I'm butchering her name right now, at the of her a former world champion, that would have definitely got her the title shot. But I think she needs another win at least to be campaigning seriously for Amanda Nunes' shot and having a claim to a title shot.
I don't have a problem if they do give her the title shot, mostly because Holly Holm and GDR have lost to Amanda, and they seem to be 1-2 right there. So if you want fresh matchups and you want eyes on the division, Juliana Pena is outspoken. They've been like any sort of beef they have is going to sell. So I don't have an issue if they give it to her. I do get people being confused considering she's lost two number one contender fights. But also, let's not forget, she's on a 4-fight win streak, beat Kat Zingano, UFC 200, the only person that had beaten Amanda Nunes in a long time. And the only reason she didn't get the title shot was because Ronda Rousey returned. Like they put her to the side to give Ronda the title, and then she ended up fighting Valentina a month later, was winning until she got submitted. So I don't have a problem if they give Juliana the title fight just because it's a new matchup and they'll sell the hell out of that fight. But I get why people were a little perplexed by the call. I don't have a problem with it. Casey, you looked like you had something to say.
Oh, I thought her calling out Nunes for the title was perfect. because I actually think it is a good call out. Like you said, UFC doesn't like doing rematches. So I doubt we're going to see Nunes Holly Holm. I doubt we're going to see Nunes JD.
Nunes is 2-0 against GDR. That fight's not happening.
Yeah, I know. So that's not going to happen. And the UFC, for some reason, booked Holly Holm and Irina Aldana. Aldana should have got that fight, but Aldana lost to Holly Holm. So Aldana's out of the running. I don't think Caitlin Vieira has a fight coming up like next week or something. Who does that leave? If Nunes, that's why I don't understand champs who go like, how dare you call out the champ? Like, I don't get that. You know, like Nunes is a champ. She should be like, yeah, every single woman that weighs 135 pounds in the world should be calling me out. That's what being the champ is about. So I know everyone's like, oh, Nunes got her. But like, to me, it's like, no, you're the champ. You don't get to decide, you know, maybe you don't want to fight Pena because you go, oh, no one knows her. I ain't gonna make enough money. If you want to go that route, that's something. But as far as Julia Pena being a credible competition, yeah, she's earned that shot. And the way the UFC has done their matchmaking, he is kind of the only one
caught left. Up to him.
Yeah, it caught up to them. Yeah, so I think it's a great call out. Now, when Julia Pena called out Megan Anderson for getting a title fight, that made zero sense. That just made zero sense. I don't know if Julia Pena didn't realize that was a different weight class or something, but that one made no sense at all. So I think that Megan Anderson part kind of confused everyone, so it kind of added to the weirdness of it, because just Pena calling for a title shot was kind of news enough, but then she added the Megan Anderson part, which was just weird.
Yeah, I don't have they should have done Juliana and Irene for the number one contender on the last Fight Island, because that would have been two. Whoever won that was a fresh matchup for the champ, and then you could have done GDR and Holly in a 3-round rematch, you know, the first time they fought was at 145, but UFC be dumb and making dumb decisions. I know I see people in the comments saying they want Valentina Amanda. I think the UFC is really gung ho on Valentina and Wei Li, so if that's the route they're taking, fine, but I don't think we're going to see Valentina Amanda anytime soon.
No. Like, I mean, there is an appetite for it, because obviously, when did they fight? It was September 2017, wasn't it? I think it was around. And that was a close fight. I mean,
very close.
I personally
had Valentina winning.
Yeah, exactly. So I think there are people clamoring for it, and you could sell it, especially because Valentina, she's on like a 6-fight win streak since then, defended the belt 4 times, I believe.
Dominant defenses too, not just not even competitive. Yeah,
I also stylistically, Juliana Pena versus Amanda is a fun fight without the trash talk, because Amanda, we haven't really seen her off her back a whole lot, and Juliana is very much a heavy wrestler. Everyone was expecting that again. The Felicia Spencer fight didn't play out like that, but I think at 135 with Amanda depleting her body from 145 to 135 again, I just like that fight as a fight, even without the trash talk of the title. But regardless, I hope that fight happens down the next for both women, but who knows with the UFC.
All right.
Thank you for the questions, Tristan. I hope we answer them.
Here we go.
From another question from Terrence, this time on Twitter. Volkanovski has been on a Twitter sneak dissing Max this past week. I know he feels disrespected because Max is the people's champ. The perception is Alex is a point fighter, which is frowned upon in MMA. Do you think Alex should just let his hands do the talking like Stipe? So obviously Max Holloway had one of the greatest performances in the history of UFC main events while we were on Fight Island, when he just decimated Calvin Kattar to the point where Dana White even said it reminded him of a fight where he was afraid Calvin might die, apparently, which was, I think, a little over the top. But I think it definitely hurts Alex's perception with the fans, just because he had two close fights. A lot of people thought Max won both, and then Max just goes on to crush Calvin Kattar in the first fight after that. So it doesn't help, but Volkanovski is just going to – I think his sneak dissing is funny. I would like to see a third fight, but just saying, what do you make of Volkanovski's comments the past few weeks?
I mean, let the champ say what he wants. You know, do you know what I mean? I have no qualms with it, but I understand why he's coming out. I don't want to say guns blazing, because that's a bit over the top, but I understand why he's saying the things that he's saying, because obviously there's still this narrative that Max won both of the fights, and I think he still wants some of the, well, yeah, I don't want to say clout that Max has, but he wants to take some of the fan base that Max had and the respect, because as Terrence put there, a lot of people still see him as a points fire. So I have no qualms with it, to be honest, but I'm just looking forward to seeing him get in there with Ortega, and I think that's in March, isn't it, if I'm correct?
Yeah, it's the co-main event of Stipe and Francis, too.
Yeah, that's going to be a really, really good fight. And if he wins, I believe that's going to be his 20th consecutive win.
Which is insane. Year,
but 20, just 20 overall, which is crazy, man. And I can't... He won both fights. He won both fights. At the end of the day, no matter how we score it or how the people score it, in the record books, in 20 years from now, people will just see that he has two wins over Max Holloway. So let him talk how he wants to talk. And if he wants to go down the route of doing it, let his hands doing the talking, I don't think that's going to work for him, especially in this day and age where people like to see outspoken champions. But let him do what he wants. I have no qualms with it.
I like Volkanovski too. The guy wrote a children's book, is a champion of the biggest fight promotion in the world, and we're out here talking about why he can't sell fights. I wish he was. He's a funny cat too. His social media is funny. I can't remember what our colleague Alex Savis refers to. She groups like Volkanovski and Whitaker and Jan Blachowicz into like a group of fighters where there's no issues with them. They're just like good, funny people who just happen to be really high level martial artists. But Casey, what do you make of the Volkanovski Holloway banter the past few weeks?
Volkanovski is the champ. I think it doesn't make Volkanovski look too. Volkanovski just needs to make do screenshots of like UFC.com. Like, hey, look who's at the top, me. That's me. That's my name. There I am right there.
Post a photo of his belt.
Yeah, like, hey, look at this. Hey, what do you, this is mine. Hey, that's all. This is a bit him being a prize fighter, him laying down the groundwork for, you know, future promotions when I assume he thinks he's going to beat Brian Ortega, and then he'll face Max. So, you know, they have more, you know, beef to talk about. Maybe he just needs that motivation in the gym. You know, because Jesus, I mean, he's fought 15 minutes with Max Holloway. That's a lot of I can see him just being tired of Max Holloway. I'm just tired of it. But hey, until you knock Max Holloway out or something like that, or definitively beat him, it's always going to be out there, you know.
Yeah, so. And Max's performance against Calvin has just satiated the need for that trilogy.
Yeah.
Just because Max looked unbelievable. So Max looks like the best featherweight in the world against Calvin Kattar. Obviously, styles make match like fights. And if Volkanovski just has the game plan to beat Max, it is what it is. Maybe Max will never beat Volkanovski. But Max Holloway pitched a perfect game against Calvin Kattar. And that just people want that trilogy. I don't have a problem if they do it. I don't have a problem if they never do it, because Max can always jump up to 155 too. He's a pretty big featherweight. And throw down at 155, which I would be fun with. I'd be fine with too. But Alex is the champ. Can't take that away from him.
Yeah, I think.
Thank you for another question, Terrence.
Don't worry, Volk. You'll make all this trash talk. You're just gonna be more money in your bank account later. So you're fine, sir.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to the YouTubers. This is the big question coming out of Fight Island. You ready?
Irabi Elmeki, apologies if I mispronounce your name. What is in Otman Azatar's bag? So yes, for those of you who aren't aware, Otman Azatar is no longer in the UFC because apparently he cut off his wristbands. So Casey, you on Fight Island, every few days you have to take a COVID test, and then when you get your results, which apparently Chisenga had a little bit of an issue with, I think the second or third test results, didn't they come in late or something like that?
Yeah, so I went downstairs to get them to begin with, and the guy said, "Oh yeah, we'll bring them to your room." And then a few hours later, no, like literally a couple hours before I meant to be getting the bus, there was no letter under the door. So then I was panicking. I went downstairs, and then I asked the guy, "Oh, do you have my results?" And he's like, "Oh, I don't know where they are," and whatever. Basically, one of his colleagues put it in the wrong drawer or whatever. But obviously, I was panicking. I was thinking, oh, what, have I tested positive? And this is their way of like trying to tell me. But luckily, that wasn't the case.
So yes, if in a world where everything works perfectly and you're not Chisenga and that you lose your test results, you take a test every few days, and then when you get a new wristband the following day, if you test negative and you get your physical copy stating negative, just in case the airport requests that you provide proof that you tested negative. So I'm in that, and they change the colors of the wristband every single time, every single changing. So Admin Azatar apparently cut his wristbands off and gave them to someone who then came into the hotel. I've heard a few stories. Some people say he gave them the wristbands before. Some people say they gave him after. I'm not quite sure, but he basically let someone inside the bubble, gave him his wristband, and this person brought a bag in with some unknown something. I don't know what it was. And then ran away from security, got caught. Admin Azatar obviously got in trouble, and he's no longer in the UFC, and everyone was thrown out of the bubble. We asked Dana White. He had absolutely no idea. If Dan Hooker had won, apparently his room was across the way from Admin, so he heard everything go down. We didn't get an opportunity to speak with him because, of course, he lost to Michael Chandler. But I've heard a bunch of theories. Some people thought it was IVs. Some people thought it was banned substances. Some people thought it was some crazy stuff that he was going to attack Connor with, which I think is the least likely scenario. Not quite sure, but whatever it is, it cost him his job in the UFC. But yeah, that was a real weird situation.
I still think it was a PlayStation. I think PlayStation 5. That's what I think it was. It's like, guys get bored, man. It's nothing to do in Fight Island. You think Fight Island's cool, but you're just stuck in a hotel room. So PlayStation 5. That's what it was.
Yeah, I wish I brought a PlayStation with me. One of my colleagues, works for the same parent company. He was also on Fire Island as well. But he brought his PlayStation with him. So obviously during the first 2 days when we were quarantined in our room, he was totally fine. He was just playing on the PlayStation, surfing the internet and the big widescreen TV and what have you. But yeah, here I was scratching the walls, just trying to, because I didn't have a balcony as well, unfortunately. So
Casey, in the hotel we stay at, there's some rooms that have balconies and some that don't. Mm-hmm. Now, normally the room should be the exact same, just minus a balcony. The ones without the balcony are substantially smaller than the ones with the balcony. It's like you're in a prison cell. It's very bizarre. It's a 5-star prison because you can't open the windows. You can't walk outside.
Is it like old boy? Like, you know, that room that he was stuck in, the old boy kind of like this?
Not nice little, sort of. Pretty much my room was double the size of Chisenga's. Like, room, like, I could jump rope in my room. I don't think Chisenga could jump rope in his room.
Your room is that small.
I did actually bring a skipping rope with me as well, but as, like you said, I there was not enough space.
That sucks. Because every time I've gone to Abu Dhabi, I stay at the W where the fighters stay at. And like, usually I go with Esther. So we get like the big room. We get like the big room. So I'm like, Abu Dhabi is great, man. But I didn't realize, yuck.
To be fair, it's still a really nice room.
Of course. The best bed that I've ever
every in. Single room. Have you been into any of the rooms in the Crown? Because we stay at the Crown Plaza. Has like a CEO style desk attached to the wall that like wraps around, and it's like next to the television. It's still a phenomenal room. It's just small, and mine's bigger. Shout out to Oscar Willis of the Mac Life, who got a suite. He had like a living room, like a 10-foot desk, a balcony, everything. Like him and John Morgan of Chunky got the suites.
When the receptionist say, "Oh, this guy's from he lives the Mac life. We have to give him the best room."
Yeah.
It's the Mac life. I missed his comment earlier, but I like this comment.
Did Jose just say it is what it is? 4 car crashes. Yeah, dog. I was driving back, so yeah, when I landed in Vegas, I drove back, and when the drive between Vegas and Phoenix, you have to go through the mountains. So like you go through Kingman, Arizona, Flagstaff, and it's the elevation is very high, and apparently it snowed in Las Vegas in general, but it was like wet snow, and then parts of northern Phoenix in the Peoria area also had a little bit of light snow. But driving back, down was unbelievable. You couldn't see the roads. You couldn't see the lines on the roads. The snow was everywhere. Ice was everywhere. Cars were just like spinning out of control, going into ditches. It was insane. So I'm like sitting there. My jaw hurts after that because I was like clenching my jaw the whole time driving, just like trying to focus. I did like 20 miles an hour down a 75 mile an hour strip of road while my hazards were flashing because I couldn't even see like 5 feet in front of me. It's the most stressed I've ever been driving a car.
It's drizzling right now in LA, so I feel you.
Oh yeah. Oh,
I feel you, man. It's the same thing I hear, man. It's dangerous out there. Thank you for the question.
Yeah, it is what it is. 4 car crashes, son.
Thank you for your comment, Mr. Babak.
Babak.
All right.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with a bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
So Kuko Keggy, longtime commenter, do you believe Dana's story about how he stopped one person from illegally streaming UFC 257? Yeah, that was weird. We heard about this all week. This had been a story with the media for a long time. We were kind of trying to figure out how to ask it. I don't know if you watched Oscar's interview with Dana where he was interviewing Dana and he asked about it. And then Dana White said something and Oscar turned to the camera and he goes, because that's illegal. Like the same kind of meme. Dana White always says that. So shout out to Oscar for landing that one. But yeah, so this, and then we all knew we were going to have to ask it. Dana knew we were going to ask it and he was ready for it. I don't know how true it was. Very bizarre situation, but yeah, Dana White apparently had the FBI monitoring someone's house apparently, and this is what I heard from a few people there, that the new law or whatever was kind of buried in the
stimulus packages.
So there is language in the stimulus package all the way at the bottom in tiny lettering that basically makes the streaming thing a federal crime now. So now the FBI can get involved. I don't know all the details of it, so don't ask me about it. I'm the wrong person to ask. This is just all what I was told. So yeah, Dana White was ready. So apparently he wanted to put the fear of God into people. So if anyone is streaming, they're like, am I the next person that's caught? Someone made a joke that the thing in Otman Azintar's bag was a streaming device so they could stream the fights live. But yeah, to say, what did you make of this whole – because obviously in the UK, I don't know the laws and stuff over there or what the pay-per-view system is in 2021. But when Dana White is talking about how he has the FBI involved and they're spying on someone's house, what's going through your mind?
Well, initially, I didn't know that he had the FBI on the case because initially he just said, we've got people watching his house, blah, 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 watching his every move. So I thought, all right, this is probably as illegal as the broadcasting of the product. But look, I mean, the UFC, they lose a lot of money. So how many people bought the Conor fight? 1.6 million. Now think of how many people seen that as well. So let's be conservative and let's just say maybe half that amount of people streamed the fight. That's a lot of money. And pay-per-view buys in America, are they like $60, if I'm correct?
They're usually $55 for standard, $65 for HD, but for this Conor one, it was like $75 just because it's Conor.
Oh, wow. Gosh. So yeah, that's a lot of revenue you're missing out on if people are streaming. But I mean, I found it funny. Like initially I thought that, oh yeah, he's just being playful with this, but as the week progressed and he kept getting asked about it more and more, like he just kept on revealing more. And it's like, yeah, we're gonna get this guy. And in particular, when he was talking about scrolling through the Instagram comments and he was like, that's the guy I want. I told my team, that's the guy.
Yeah.
I found it funny, but I mean, fair play to him. The man has a business to run and what have you. And I mean, at the end of the day, fighters who are getting pay-per-view points are also missing out on money if people are streaming it.
Someone brought an idea to my Twitter mentions. They go, I wonder if Dana White knows how VPNs work because then they could just geotag themselves at Dana White's house. And then Dana White be like, they're streaming from inside my house. And then he goes and kicks the door down to find no one there.
Well, that's what I think happened. I think hackers tricked him and they set the VPN to route to wherever the ESPN Plus servers are, because when they crash.
Oh, yeah. Did you see all that just saying the ESPN Plus subscription, the streams for whatever, the pay-per-view were not working on the West Coast?
Yeah, I saw that. And obviously that was the main market that they catered to, but with having the fight start at 4 a.m. So, I mean, how frustrating must that be? Like, did you guys see Kevin Lee's tweet? He was frustrated. He was like, Dana, I'm streaming this thing. You know where I'm at. If you collect the money. Yeah. I thought that was hilarious. But I mean,
just take it out.
Imagine,
check,
imagine spending like what the equivalent of that is probably close to like maybe £50 or something over here. But I'd be hella annoyed if I spent that type of money and I couldn't even get the stream.
I think the waiting line to get your refund was like at one point, like 900 people deep. Yeah. Like you had to wait in line. Our own Steven Morocco tweeted a photo of it. There was like 700 people in front of him, but yeah, that was a nightmare. Another question from Terrence Leverett, this time on Twitter. Connor looked uncharacteristically nervous walking to the cage. He didn't seem as light on his feet. Do you think Connor viewed this as more of a boxing match warm-up coming in, not an MMA fight? Also, he said his sparring partners doesn't hit him hard. Does he need new looks in sparring? Well, I know for a fact, I've heard from a few people that they think the Connor's foray into boxing just threw his flow off, because he isn't. It's his striking. He doesn't throw as many kicks. He's very it's kind of a hybrid of like boxing and MMA striking right now. And this question that Terrence is bringing up about his opponent, his sparring partner is not hitting him hard. Casey, you train right now. I don't know if you're saying if you train or have trained. You can't really hit calf kicks as hard as you can without pads in camp. Yeah. You can't. You'll mess your leg up. Like, you can wear pads, but you're not going to be able to feel it. So when Connor said, I've never felt that before, and people are like, what do you mean you're a professional fighter? I believed him, because you can't train those. It's not like you can unload on people's legs in camp, because you're getting, like you saw happen in a fight. Imagine that damage accruing over weeks and weeks and weeks leading up to a fight. So I believed Connor when he said that. I do think Connor's foray into boxing threw him off for sure. He just was very boxing heavy and didn't throw like his snap front kick that we've seen a million times, his spinning back kick to the body that we've seen a million times that he famously hit on Chad Mendes. You didn't see that. But just saying, what'd you make of Connor's stylistic approach to his matchup against Poirier?
Yeah, he seemed – obviously he brought in his old boxing coach, Phil Sutcliffe, a very well-respected boxing coach in Ireland. And it just seems that, as you said, he took a very boxing-heavy approach. And he even said it in the build-up to the fight that he was treating this as a warm-up for a Manny Pacquiao fight. And, I mean, adopting that approach against Poirier in hindsight was a terrible idea. I mean, I don't think – none of us envisioned – Poirier going to the well of calf kicks so often, but Connor, he's just not the same. He's not as light in his feet. He's not, he doesn't hand fight as well. That was a key thing in his fights with Eddie Alvarez in particular, that the hand fighting he was doing and the pawing out was beautiful and was key to his flawless victory that night. But he's very, very heavy on his lead leg now. And I think that's, a lot of people were saying in the build-up, oh yeah, Poirier could make use of that or whatever. I didn't pay too much attention to it, because I thought, oh well, he's still somewhat light in his feet and whatsoever, and he'll be able to check the kicks. But that didn't happen. So I think he's kind of got to revert back to his old ways. Obviously, take the lessons that you've learned from reuniting with your boxing coach and try implement them to a certain extent. But do what got you to the dance.
I also remember, like, they did the – I can't remember which fight it was for. Maybe it was for the Aldo fight. Maybe it was for the Mendes fight. It was one of his fights at featherweight, and he was going to this guy, and he was, like, stretching his – like, the guy was doing crazy stretches on his hamstrings to make Connor hyper-flexible, because Connor wanted to use his kicks as punches. Like, he's like, I want people to be afraid. Like, they can be as close as I can. They can, and that they should still fear my kicks, because that's how flexible I am. You don't really see that Connor right now. He's obviously, we've seen it all, flat on his feet, this and that. Doesn't Poirier also hit him really hard? So take that. You got to take that into consideration. But Casey, as someone who trains, what did you make of Connor's approach to the fight?
Well, back to the calf kicks. Yeah, you're right. And sparring is really difficult. I mean, I'm assuming if you're sparring with your own training partners, like you don't want to break your toys, as they say. So it's hard to throw calf kicks with the same velocity you would throw in a real fight. They're kind of like standing elbows and elbows in general. It's hard to throw elbows in when you're sparring because
Saw that when Askren and Woodley were flowing, they would like air throw elbows but not actually connect.
Yeah, you have to be really careful with elbows, especially in sparring, because you know, one little cut, you know, suddenly everything's all screwed up. But I just think Connor's coaches got severely out game planned by Dustin's coach, which is his main coach, is Mike Brown. It's a really good video. Actually, I was very impressed. I think BJJ Scout put comparing Dustin's calf kick, his road to victory with calf kicks, very similar to just a couple weeks ago with Mike Brown's other high level student Kyoji Horiguchi.
Yeah,
Kyoji Horiguchi just won a main event, and it was a rematch. Against a guy, Kyoji Horiguchi got dominated, got knocked out by Kai Asakura the first time they fought. They rematched on New Year's Eve, and Horiguchi just nailed Asakura with calf kicks. And so, like, the game plan was already out there as far as the coach, Mike Brown. And so Connor's coaches need to see what Dustin's coaches are planning. And it was out there. And I think Connor's lack of just cage time really hurt him, because Dustin mentioned this in the post-presser. He took a bunch of calf kicks from Jim Miller and a fight that he won, but
UFC 204, I believe.
And even though Dustin Dustin won that fight, but still had to go to the hospital afterward because his legs were so messed up, even in victory. So Dustin Poirier had that real in cage experience, knowing, oh, those suck, and I can kick even harder than Jim Miller can. So, and obviously Connor wasn't ready for them, and he didn't adjust, and yeah, it got him. I mean, I think there were a lot of factors why Connor lost. That was one of the main ones.
Yeah, and remember when Connor was coming up and he would talk about Jose Aldo, he would always be like, oh, he would always bring up his Thai boxing stance, I mean, flat on his feet. And I remember there was some of the media talked about it on Fight Island. There was some interview, and I can't remember what it was. It was a scrum, I think. And basically Connor McGregor recited every single person ranked above him. He knew their reach off the top of his head. And I don't know if that's the same Conor McGregor we're getting anymore. That is so obsessed with MMA. Like, he knew he'd be like, Korean Zombie, so-and-so reach inches in reach. Like, maybe it's just not the same Conor. I have literally no idea. But yeah, Mike Brown, 100% outcoached John Kavanaugh with that. And also someone on Reddit brought up a 4 or 5 year old interview with Bosh Rutan, and he said exactly what Dustin Poirier did 5 years ago. He goes, this is how you beat Conor McGregor. Calf kicks because of his wide stance, heavy on his lead foot, blah, 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 so-and-so, finished him in the second round. That is what Dustin Poirier did, and I think he shows out to Bosh Rutan for recognizing that like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually spoke to Bosh during fight week, and he said the same thing when I asked him for a prediction. But again, I still was of the school of thought that, oh, yeah, Conor's still somewhat light in his feet or whatever, but evidently, I mean, we saw from the first couple of exchanges, you saw how heavy he was leading on that right leg, and then it was there to be hit.
And once Connor's cardio goes just a little bit down past 100%, so say it's like 70%, he's a little bit heavier on that foot, and then he just can't get out of the way, and it only takes one good calf kick, and then, I mean, the guy who blew everyone away in the co-main event, Michael Chandler. That's how lost one of his last losses. Got a
calf kick.
Yeah, he got a calf kick, and he was just like.
And then same as Sean O'Malley a couple months ago.
Yeah, so like those things can like, man, you can just train your butt off, but you take one wrong kick on the calf, and all of a sudden, just your game's gone.
Yeah, and exactly. And remember, didn't Cejudo landed one on Demetrius Johnson? Right? Am I correct? Or
I think it was like one really hard one that made a buckled DJ.
Oh, no, it was the other way around. I'm sorry. It was Demetrius that landed it, because I'm remembering it right now. And Cejudo, like, literally his ankle was like wobbling like that. He was the drop.
Some Randy from Randy at Bunch Flood on Twitter. what would make the least amount of sense for the UFC to do with a lightweight belt? I've seen people talking about Dustin V. Diaz for the belt and make zero sense, so it's probably going to happen. Yeah, Dustin V. Diaz for the champ for the UFC lightweight championship would not make any sense, so it will probably happen. But, oh, man. So, Casey, I'll start with you. Which fight would make the least amount of sense? But let's try to keep it semi-realistic. So don't say Clay Guida versus Bobby Green in the lightweight title. Like, let's actually keep it like this could happen, but it would make the least amount of sense.
Conor McGregor versus Joe Duffy out of retirement for the title. That's the fight we want to see, man. Revenge. I think Randy got it right. I think Dustin versus Diaz is a fight that makes zero sense, makes a lot of money for the UFC. It's a fight that Dustin wants. It's a fight that Nate wants. Putting a belt on the line just seems absolutely ridiculous. If those guys want to fight, cool. It really delegitimizes any worthiness to the UFC championship belt if they put a title on that. This is a little sidebar, whatever. I'm kind of confused on Dustin's angle on this, because sometimes he goes, I want to fight Diaz. I want to fight, Charles. You know, I don't want to fight Michael Chandler, you know, or I'll fight Connor again. But then the other time, but even mentioning Diaz, you know, that's just strictly a money fight. It's a grudge match and money fight. But then on the other side of his mouth, he kind of talks about, I just want to be a champion. I just want to tell my wife I'm a champion. Well, you're not going to be a champion if you fight Nate Diaz. You have to fight Oliveira or Michael Chandler if the UFC decides that way. So I was just confused on the Nate Diaz thing. But Dustin, Poirier versus Nate Diaz for the belt makes zero sense. And I think, Randy's right. There's a good chance it will happen.
I don't have any problem if they do Chandler versus – if they want to do Dustin versus Diaz for just a fight, I don't have a problem with that. And if they do Chandler versus Oliveira, I have no problem with that too. And then because right now Dustin Poirier is the number one lightweight on the rankings. Khabib is still, for some reason, still the champion. We just had this big conversation that Dustin might be the second greatest lightweight ever. If Nate Diaz goes out there and beats Dustin, I don't have a problem if they want to throw him into a title fight, because you just beat the number one guy.
So if you beat
the number one guy, go fight for a title, have at it, don't care. If they want to do Chandler versus Oliveira or Gaethje Oliveira and then Diaz, Poirier, and the winners fight each other, I don't have a problem with that either. Tony Ferguson's out there, Justin Gaethje's out there. But Dustin Diaz shouldn't make any sense. Chisanga, if you are booking, so I'll flip this question around. If you have full control, what are the next few fights for the top of the lightweight division that actually makes sense to you?
That actually makes sense. I mean, Dustin wants to be a champion. He's got to face the most informed lightweight there is, other than Khabib, and that's Charles Oliveira. And for me, I'd do Chandler versus Gaethje. That would be my second fight. And then I'd also try to do Conor versus Tony. But there's some legs to this Nate Diaz thing. I mean, just the way that when the trilogy fight with Conor was kept being put to Dustin, he kept mentioning Nate, and I wouldn't be surprised. And there is precedent for a Diaz brother getting a title shot on the back of a loss. Because you'll remember, Nick Diaz lost to Carlos Condit for the interim welterweight title, and then he fought George St. Pierre in his next fight for the undisputed title. So, I mean, people were saying that, Jose Aldo getting the title shot at a bantamweight was the precedent for this, but this precedent was set a long, long time ago. And given the amount of money that the fight would make, I wouldn't be surprised if they did that.
I liked your setup of Poirier, Oliveira, Gaethje, Chandler, and I don't have any problem with that. The Tony Connor fight, I think, is the one that the UFC would want to get to, maybe because maybe they look at Tony as like past his prime. Maybe they think Connor can beat him. He's still a big name, top five greatest lightweight ever, so on and so forth. So I don't have a problem with that either. Someone in the comment section said Holloway versus Connor 2 at 155. Probably not going to happen, but would still be a fun fight.
I just don't. If the UFC wants Connor to win, I think Ferguson is a bad matchup. I just don't think Connor has the cardio to beat Tony Ferguson. Yeah, he has the power to hurt him, but I don't think at 55 he necessarily has the cardio to actually to finish Tony Ferguson. I think Tony Ferguson will actually end up defeating Conor in the later rounds. But it's still a cool fight. But this is only if the UFC wants Conor to, if UFC wants Conor to win, which I think they do because that makes him more money. I think Ferguson's a bad idea. But
I think the Nate trilogy would be a good one for Conor too.
Yes, yeah, it seems perfect right now. But yeah,
yeah, a good point you make about Ferguson's cardio, because I remember watching who did he fight at 229 when he fought Anthony Pettis. And just his work rate just kept increasing, like with each passing round. Like, I've never seen anybody put that amount of pressure on somebody like so late into the fight. Like, as the fight's getting on, the pressure just keeps on increasing. And I mean, Tony Ferguson's a cardiovascular freak. So that's a very salient point that you make about a potential fight with Conor. I mean, with Conor, I think you've got to weather like the first 8 to 9 minutes, and then that's where it gets a bit dicey for him. And I mean, that's when Tony kicks on from. So it could be a tough one.
I'll ask you guys this. I know it wasn't asked in the anything. Is Dustin the favorite to be the lightweight champion moving forward now? If Habib is officially retired, well, Habib is retired. Would you say that Dustin is now the best lightweight in the world? Because like, if he rematches Conor, I favor Dustin. I would also favor Dustin against Charles Oliveira. I'd also favor Dustin against Michael Chandler. I just think Dustin's better. I just think he's peaking perfectly right now.
Yeah, undoubtedly he's the best lightweight in the world, other than Habib. But we need some clarity on what the hell is going on. Like, I was expecting some sort of dramatic change today, because obviously yesterday, Tuesday was a ranking day. So I thought, are they finally going to get rid of Habib from the rankings and then we'll have a bit more clarity? But lo and behold, that's not happened. And I think Dana just needs to stop pestering Habib and his mother probably. I was about to say sliding in Habib's mother's DMs or whatever, but he's probably just communicating with her somehow. I don't know. But that needs to stop. Like, I mean, just let the man. Didn't he say he wants to go back to university and like tend to his farm or whatever? Yeah, just let him go do that. He's given you some big fights. You've made a lot of money from him. Just let him ride off into the sunset.
That's not how Dana works. Yeah, he's made a lot of money, but Dana can make more money. What's better than a lot of money is more money.
This is very true.
Yeah. And Habib, man, Habib versus Dustin too. It's trending bigger than Habib versus Conor, man. It's trending, man. It's trending. I'm just saying.
Unreal.
We have a lot. Okay, now we're going to start going through speed rounds, speed questions. But I've thrown this out there, and man, I love this fight, but I don't think it will happen, but I freaking love it.
That's what we just said a few minutes ago. It's going to, I love it. It's not going to, I said Conor Holloway too, lightweight. Love it. Probably not going to happen. Absolutely love it.
Who's your favorite in that fight, though?
Holloway. That's probably the thing. I as much as like we still say Conor is still an elite guy, but then like, but I would pick Gaethje over Conor. I'll pick Ferguson over Conor. I'll pick Holloway over Conor. Like, I'm picking all these guys over Conor. And so I still think obviously Conor's a top A level lightweight, just not A+, I guess.
So rapid fire right now, Casey. Last question from Terrence. The Paul said they would box MMA fighters and take an MMA fight with real boxers. It seems like a variation of a boxing model where it's advised to handpick your matchups. Bellator does this. Do you think UFC should as well to build stars? So I've said this. For all of the flack we give the UFC for like matchmaking and not making sense and this and that, I don't have a problem with a lot of the matchups they do, because they can build big stars. Because I've said this a few times on the A side, just saying again, to put this into perspective, one of the biggest stars that should be around in your part of the world is Michael Venom Page. He has everything. He has all of the tools to be a massive star in the UFC. And the Bellator keeps giving him these fights that he should win. And every single fight we're saying, all right, the next fight should be a step up. Next fight should be a step up. I actually had him winning, but he looked good against Lima until he got knocked out. He was doing a good job off his back, controlling the wrist and everything. And then he himself said when he got knocked down, he was so confident on his feet after the first round that he made a mistake and went forward rather than backwards. Forward. It was one mistake. That's all that matters. L is an L. MVP started fighting, I think, before Corey Sandhagen. And Corey Sandhagen is out here wheel kicking number one bantamweights in the world, main eventing fight nights, fighting former champions, and the, where he's like top, getting number one contender fights. Michael Venom Page could have that if he was in the UFC. So I don't have a problem with a lot of the UFC's matchmakings because they do build up guys. Like look at Holloway, just win. All of a sudden he's cleaned out the division right away. I wish Bellator would give these fights that the fans want to see. I do like their Grand Prix because you can't argue with tournaments. You can't, but I also like, I want to see MVP fight Larkin. I want to see MVP fight Lima again. I want to see all these top welterweights fighting. But just saying, what are your thoughts? Because I could ramble on about this forever.
Do I think the UFC should get in the pole business or where? No. I don't like the idea. And I don't like the, like, when I saw the announcement for the Ben Askren fight yesterday, I don't want to say my heart sank, but there was a bit of a sigh of despair because Ben's legacy in mixed martial arts is already cemented. But I think now, obviously, he was got knocked out by Jorge Masvidal. That'll be 2 years in the summer. That's actually that's gone by very, very, very quickly. And I think now he's in danger in terms of the casual perception. I think he's in danger of being knocked out by Jake Paul. I know a lot of people are going to come at me for saying this or whatever, but I truly believe that. And let's not forget, I think there's a 13-year age difference between them. I think Ben's 36 and Jake Paul's like 23 or something 36 like that. 36
coming off major hip surgery.
And he hasn't been training. I think he's only been resumed training late last year, if I'm correct, or if I'm wrong, but he hasn't been immersing himself in the sweet science as well. That's another thing. That's all that these Paul brothers have been doing. So I don't like the Ben Askren matchup for that. And the Pauls fighting, taking MMA fights against real boxers. Nah, come on, man. I don't want to see this stuff. I get it. There's kind of a market for it with these younger fans or whatever. I say this now because I'm like in my 30s. I can get away with saying the younger kids or what have you. But I for one, I'm glad the UFC, they kind of went down that route with CM Punk. But obviously CM Punk, he took it seriously. He immersed himself in mixed martial arts for a good 2 years before he actually fought Mickey Gall, and then he fought Mike Jackson. Obviously, it didn't go the way that the UFC would have hoped or what have you. But I'm glad that they've shied away from the show business side of things, and I don't want them to go anywhere near that side of the fight game, which is now.
It can work out. Brock Lesnar worked out. He became champion. He's one of the biggest stars in the history of combat sports. And then you get guys like Kimbo, where they gave a legitimate chance to on the Ultimate Fighter, gave him Houston Alexander was a bad dude.
Yeah, exactly. Kimbo
So like it works out sometimes, but the UFC throws him in there with like legitimate killers. They're not picking fights for these guys. Casey?
They made Kimbo fight Roy Nelson in his first fight.
Well, I think they didn't make them. The coaches picked. Because for whatever reason, if you remember season 10 Rampage, they go, do you want to pick first fighter or first fight? And he's like, fighter, Kimbo. And I was like, stupid.
Yeah.
You're going to match up with Roy Nelson immediately. Yeah, so and that's what happened.
You change. Yeah. It's a reality show. Everything's fake. There's no reality in reality TV. So I can't believe they did. I'm going back a decade now. Now I'm still annoyed at how the UFC handled that. But they got good ratings, whatever.
They did. And they still gave him fights after. Like he got the fight against Houston Alexander. He got the fight against Matt Mitrione. So like those are big. Those are talented fighters. They're not just fighting YouTube stars.
Matt Mitrione knocked out Fedor. He's
like, yes, he did. Double knockdown, man. That was crazy. I remember. Yeah. But going back to your point about Brock Lesnar.
Go ahead.
He had a martial arts background with wrestling, though.
Yeah, I think that was Logan that had the Logan was a legitimate wrestler. Yeah.
Because did you see him that video? Like,
with him and Paulo? Yeah.
Some of the scrambles were, he looked good. And like you could tell that obviously he's well versed in wrestling. But I mean, I just want those guys nowhere near MMA because we've had some circuses in MMA. Obviously, Floyd Mayweather fighting Conor, obviously, but obviously that wasn't boxing, but it was a crossover thing. But the less circuses, the better. I know it puts new eyes on the sport and there's an argument for that. But at the same time, I don't want to see the legitimacy of it ruined.
And I really enjoy amateur wrestling and I really enjoy boxing. But our own colleague, Damon Martin, who works on our site, he is so much more ingrained in the amateur wrestling world than me. And he also lives in Ohio. He said Logan has a very legitimate background in amateur wrestling. So he would have not a problem transitioning to MMA. It would be easier for him than boxing. And then Andreas Hale, who was on the A side a few weeks ago, he works for DAZN too. He covers box. He's been covering boxing for like 10, 15 years. He is much more, has much more of a vast knowledge about boxing than me. People in his world say Jake Paul has a very good jab in boxing and he's taking it very seriously. So I believe those guys, because they've been doing this for so long, I actually do think Jake Paul has a very good shot at beating Ben Askren, especially coming off major hip surgery.
Hip surgery is life changing.
Andy M in the YouTube comments saying MVP in the UFC, bunch of laughing emojis, land to the slaughter. We don't know. We don't know.
We just did the one constant in all the years I've been working in MMA is the same thing. When someone goes to UFC, they're going to get slaughtered. When Justin Gaethje goes to the UFC, he's going to get slaughtered. When Michael Chandler goes to the UFC, he's going to get slaughtered. You know, when Eddie Alvarez goes to the UFC, he's going to get slaughtered. I hear that so many freaking times. It's just like, dude, just because they fought their entire careers in a cage without eight sides doesn't mean it somehow doesn't count. All that matters is the guy across from them. And Michael Venom Page has fought tough dudes, and he's lost to some tough. He's lost to one. And Douglas Lima, who I consider probably the number two welterweight in the freaking world.
Yeah.
So this is more of a hate post I put up there. I believe nothing about this.
I will never forgive Bellator for making MVP versus Paul Daly in Connecticut, though. That was foolish. That should have been in the. Wasn't Mirko in the co-main? Like, why is Mirko and then two of the biggest stars in the UK fighting in Connecticut? Of that should have been in the UK.
I guarantee Coker wanted it that way, but I'm sure just, you know, things don't happen that way.
Yeah.
It's not, and let's not talk about MVP versus Daly ever again because we watched that together, Jose. That was very.
I forgot about you were in Phoenix for that. That was the same weekend.
And we were so excited. We were like, oh man, they're fighting. I can't wait for this fight. I was like, oh no, why did I get excited for this?
I wrote three articles about the UFC card in the span it took for that fight to be over. But yeah, MVP in the UFC, maybe he gets destroyed. I still want to see it. Like, you're telling me you wouldn't want to watch MVP fight anyone in the top 15 in your life.
Brock Lesnar got destroyed when he came to the UFC. But he's still Brock Lesnar. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I don't know. Will Brooks came to the UFC and won his first fight, and that didn't turn out. So, like, I don't know. It's just, you don't know.
And he lost his first fight. Like, it happens.
Yeah, it happens, man.
It happens, yeah, exactly. But who did it? Eddie fought Donald Cerrone's first Cowboy. Fight, if I'm correct.
Cowboy, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, from Eve Edwards Casual, from at Casual Eve. In 2020, we saw so many greats retire. How likely is it that 2021 is the year of a lot of dominant champions lose, like Usman, John Jones, and Izzy? Well, John Jones isn't a champion right now, so he can't lose his title. He gave it up. But yeah, so fun stat. I brought this to Dana's attention on the last pay-per-view. 2020 saw no defending champions lose their title. The only new champions were vacant title fights or interim title fights or stuff like that. No reigning champion entering their fight lost in 2020. Oh. So history would show we would probably get maybe one in 2021. Izzy, maybe. I think Jan could also lose, but he's not a dominant champion yet. I think Usman has a real tough fight in Burns and a bunch of fights. The Colby Covington fight is no guaranteed win either. Stipe could lose too. I would like Ngannou could touch you and you die. But yeah, what do you think, Chizanga? Any of these dominant champions losing?
I think out of all the ones you mentioned there, I think Gilbert Burns poses the biggest threat to Kamaru Usman in terms of the opponents. I think the skill set, I mean, his striking has just got so much better. And I mean, multiple world time jiu-jitsu champion, Usman's not going to want to take it to the floor. So I think Usman, out of those ones I mentioned, is probably the most likely to be dethroned. But Stipe Francis, I don't see drastic improvements in Francis. It makes me confident that,
I asked Francis this. I brought the case. You were there when I interviewed him. I go, Francis, do you think you've shown enough improvements in between? Because this was right after he knocked out, I think it was after he knocked out JDS. I can't quite remember. Yeah. I go, do you think you've shown improvements since your last fight? He goes, I don't know. I've knocked a bunch of guys out in like 40 seconds. What else do you want me to do?
But then again, like, he's just a victim of his own success in that regard. But we want to see if he can pace himself, because I don't know if you, there's still this clip going around of Francis absolutely swinging for the fences and Stipe just showing excellent evasive skills. But I think he's got to, obviously we know that he has to negate the wrestling as well. So, but we haven't seen anybody try to take him down. So we don't know if there's been any marked improvements in that area.
He beat Curtis Blaydes twice.
One was a knockout. One was a TKO. Might have been a doctor stoppage. I can't remember. Anyway,
he beat the crap out of Curtis Blaydes twice.
I will say two things. I'm just saying. Two words that I think favors Francis heavily in the rematch. Tiny cage. Because if that fight is in the apex, that's tiny octagon.
Yeah.
You think Francis has such a long reach, you can just reach over and swing. The smaller the octagon, the bigger I favor Francis. If that fight is in the apex, man, Stipe's not gonna have a lot of places to run away from those lunch boxes.
Yeah, that's something I didn't actually factor in. And I know a lot of people, before the Adesanya Costa fight was confirmed for Fight Island, a lot of people were wondering, how will the smaller cage will favor Paolo? But I think more so that will favor Francis against Stipe, because as you say, he's just got
the Izzy Paolo fight was on a big octagon, actually. It ended up being in the big octagon, which did not favor. Well, Powell's game plan was also ridiculous, too.
Yeah. Should have just rushed him. Yeah.
Anyway, any more questions, Casey? I know we're running up on time. We took 2 weeks off. It's not like we have media day, because this is the first non-UFC week we've had in a long time.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Koreshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
Did we answer this one? Oh, yeah, sorry, we answered that one. Oh, man, it's a lot of ones.
Three questions. Jose said Abu Dhabi is dark. Flag through MMG 2K20 on the site. Three questions and a comment. Jose Young said Abu Dhabi is dark in my soul. What the heck happened to you there? Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, because Abu Dhabi was obviously you do get burnt out quickly, especially with the time zone and everything. Shazanga, I think, can agree. There were some colleagues there that didn't take their jobs as seriously as people who cover the sport all of the time. And it really bothered me, because we're all taking time away from our families and friends and relatives, and we're flying 8,000 miles away to cover a sport that we love. And I just think some people there were not actual journalists, and it really bothered me. And it genuinely, like, I left some fights like with a very sour taste in my mouth, witnessing some of the things I saw from our colleagues in the media. So I don't know if Chisanga had the same way. That was my perspective. And I know if Casey saw it, he would also be pulling out his mustache hair. But all in all, Fight Island is great. It's just nonstop work. I never got used to the time zone. I'll go as much as I'm never going to say no to going. Just got a little annoyed with some people behind the scenes. Dustin dismissed Chandler in the post-fight presser and spoke about Diaz and McGregor for the belt. Makes zero sense. If Dustin wants to fight for the title, it has to be Oliveira or Chandler. If he wants McGregor or Diaz, it cannot be for the title. Your views. Chizanga, you obviously, this is pretty much what you said verbatim. Yeah. So you obviously agree. Do you agree?
I agree. Said the same thing too. Yeah.
We all agree. Number three, what's next for McGregor? I personally think he has two fights left in him, and there are Diaz and Poirier trilogies. Diaz seems like the more winnable fight for him, and he definitely needs to win. Poirier seems like a bad idea right now, as the great Luke Thomas says, immediate rematches are never a good idea for someone who just got KO'd. Don't want to see the immediate rematch. Any three of us, quickly, do you want to see the immediate rematch between Poirier and McGregor?
No.
Nope.
We all agree. I think the Diaz fight is great, or the Tony fight. I think those are the two that Conor should take. Chizanga, yes or no?
Yeah, I'm completely agreeing with you on that.
Conor versus Diego Sanchez.
Don't even put that into the ether. And then for my comment, he says from MMG2K20 on the site, for my comment, the Invicta card Casey referenced on the Laura Sanko post show where he wanted to interview the losers featured Carlos Barza, Raquel Pennington, Amanda Nunes, Joanne Calderwood, Rose Namajunas, Tisha Torres, and Paige VanZant. Wow. Yeah. Honestly, we've talked about this a few times on the show, but not in a while. If you want to look at stacked cards, like historically stacked in retrospect, those early Invicta cards were insanely stacked. If you look at it retrospectively, I think I looked, UFC 160 is the same. I think there's a major name in every single fight from the first fight to the last fight. But yeah, go look at those early Invicta cards. Yeah. There are some phenomenal fights on those.
Yeah,
Rose was like 2-1 or something crazy like that.
When people ask me like, what's your favorite things you've ever done in MMA? And I always say covering those early Invicta cards in Kansas City. And I didn't know any of these women were. And I was just watching a fight, watching a warm up, seeing them all week. I was like, holy crap, these women are awesome. These are stars. And like, just no one knows. And they're fighting in front of like 200 people in Kansas City. And I was I was in the cage. I'm doing interviews behind the scenes, backstage. I mean, in the cage, you know, I'm in the cage, you know, right before the fight, right after the fight. So as far as just me and my MMA experience working in it, that was easily the coolest thing. And I was there for Laura Sanko's very first fight when she her one and only fight when she defeated Cassie Robb. I was like, oh.
Chizanga, who's the biggest female star in UK MMA right now?
Biggest female star in UK MMA
or Europe? I'll just group Europe in general.
Or Europe. Well, if you go in Europe, I'd still say it's undoubtedly Joanna. She's still the most still the most popular. But if we're going in the UK, it's got to be my girl, Molly McCann, my favorite Scouser. I got to give her a shout out. And she fights in, I think, about 10 days. I think it was on card in Vegas.
She's a very good friend of the show. She's been on once before. One of the more popular episodes we've had. She's great.
Oh, she's phenomenal, man. She's fighting that. Is it Lara Pros? I can't even say her name. I'm going to butcher
Lara
her name.
Principio. Yeah, I'm not sure.
That's coming around quickly. But am I right in thinking that that she's come off like a suspension? I think she has.
I'm not sure.
I have no idea off the top of my head.
Yeah. Anyway. But that's going to be a good fight. I'll probably say Molly is probably the most popular female in the UK. And then just below her is Joanne Calderwood, who put on like a virtuoso performance against Jessica. I just rewatched the fight yesterday, and yeah, she looked very, very good. And I love the way that when they were breaking from the clinch, she was always throwing a strike at the end, whether it be a kick or whether it be a knee. But she looked fantastic, and I think she's probably going to be next for Valentina, to be honest.
Laura Procopio had a 6-month USADA suspension, but she's already cleared to fight.
And she's coming off a coronavirus too. So she did have a fight canceled. She was supposed to fight earlier this year. She got the virus in May. She was supposed to fight in Jacksonville, actually. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So suspension and coronavirus. But yeah.
I would say for Valentina, I bet they do Andrade first, and then I think JoJo could fight Lauren Murphy for the No More Contender. Would have a problem with that, because I think Andrade's done enough. Finishing Kyle Chookagian was very impressive in her debut. And even Lauren Murphy said in that real heated press conference, she's like, I don't have a problem if they get Andrade the title fight. So even Lauren Murphy agrees. I think Dana's very much gung-ho on it. So JoJo Murphy for the number one contender. I like that. On the same card, too. I hope it's on the same card. Any more, Casey? What about RDA from Bruno Vieira on the site? Do you think RDA is being overlooked? Former lightweight champion. 100%. Just saying, are you in agreement?
100%, man. I don't think people are giving him enough credit for the performance against Paul Felder. I think people are just thinking, oh, well, he fought the guy on 5 days' notice and what have you. But RDA's resume, people forget some of the people that he's beaten. I still think he's a world-class lightweight. I really do. And to be honest, his name should be in the conversation to fight Conor right now as well.
I agree.
If at the time, I mean, he's missed out on that fight twice, once through injury. And then remember, they were going to do that like interim welterweight title in Brazil.
Yeah.
Like,
I forgot until about the, that.
Until the Conor's antics at the UFC media day. So I'd love to see that fight. I mean, stylistically, that was a great fight, I think. So yeah, he should be in the conversation, definitely. And RDA, I'm a big fan of his.
If RDA, if he really can make 155 pounds and still maintain, you know, maximum fighting ability, absolutely. He actually can win the title. He's that good. It's just, is he too big for 155? I mean, not saying Eddie Alvarez beats him every day, like the way he beat him, but that wasn't a good weight cut by RDA, and that's why, you know, Eddie Alvarez looked like he had such an easy time defeating him when Eddie won the title. But the RDA that destroyed Pettis, that crazy cardio that he had, like RDA.
Who's next?
Good.
Who do you give him next? Who do you give him next? I think it's Connor or the Islam fight.
I think Islam. I think you keep him very far away from Connor. I say this only from the UFC's money making perspective. In just terms of competitive matchups, I want to see. Yeah, of course, I want to see Conor versus RDA. Wait,
Is Islam fighting Drew Dober?
Yes,
I think so. So maybe
winner of that. I don't have that, a yeah. Winner of that. Great. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fine with me.
It's so weird when we go, should this guy fight Conor? And I always go, yeah, but it's not going to happen because Conor may lose, and that's not what the UFC wants. So I'm always answering this from a UFC perspective. That's kind of important to note. Of course,
RDA and Hooker shouldn't happen because I think I would heavily favor RDA, and that would be three losses in a row for Hooker, which no one wants.
Okay. Well, we don't know if Hooker's going to fight again. I mean, like, remember,
he threw to the bottom of it.
Yeah.
I don't want it. I don't like RDA Hooker.
Me neither.
Hooker needs to take time off.
Me neither. Hooker.
Talk about game plans. Phenomenal game plan from Michael Chandler. That lead jab, like three times in a row, that Hooker basically had to block down and then jab into the overhand, which is perfectly set up. So all these people saying that Hooker lost before the fight happened are completely overlooking Michael Chandler's game plan in that, because that was perfection.
Yeah. And we were talking about calf kicks. Hooker was trying to land those calf kicks early doors on Michael Chandler. Yeah. I mean, it could have been a completely different story if we connected with the soft part of the muscle there. And that would have been, obviously we talked about it before in the Bellator in New York when Brent Primus landed that calf kick. And well, remember afterwards in the corner as well during the break that the official took away the stool, and then Chandler ended up.
Don't bring that up. Oh, I still feel so bad for Michael Chandler in that moment. That was so cruel. Yeah,
about that.
Yeah, you're listening at home. Google Chandler stool gate. I don't know. it was probably one of the most humiliating experiences I've ever seen a high level fighter have to go through in Madison Square Garden. It's like,
oh god.
Losing your title to a relatively unknown guy like that, and then they still whoop. Oh man! Speaking of European lady fighters,
is
that her?
How do you pronounce her last name?
Ferrero.
Fiore.
I skipped French class in school, so my pronunciation.
I apologize if I mispronounced her name. She looked unbelievable. First female to get a stoppage win in 2021. I don't know if she's a title contender right now, but she's laid the seeds, at least, that we're talking about it, which is all you can ask it. But yeah, Europe, and specifically France, has a legitimate fighter on their hands. And I'm not even going to try and pronounce her last name. I'm very sorry. But yes, go look up her win.
Yeah, and I think that's her on how many five win streak now? I think.
It's well, she has a super extensive amateur career. She was a champion in the IMMAAF, and she even said like fighters need to go do that because her pro record is not indicative of the number of the amount of cage time she's had. But anyway,
she kind of went the Lomachenko route where she fought like just so many amateurs. Yeah. So when she got she came as a pro, she was basically ready for elite competition.
100%.
It's the same. Same as that Muhammad Makhayev as well. I mean, he's had extensive experience. I think, 23 or 24 amateur fights. And then obviously now he's 4-0, I believe.
Shorty Torres, a good friend of the show, same way. I think he was a champ in the IMMAF and he had like this long amateur career before he hopped over and became a champ in Titan. Rocco Slodic in the YouTube comments, Whitaker versus Costa. Till versus Vittori, your thoughts about the matchups? Absolutely hate them. I think they should do Whitaker versus Vittori and Till versus Costa, just because if Costa wins, he's not getting a title fight anytime soon. Till Vittori, I get, because Vittori beat the guy that Till was supposed to fight, but Whitaker, Vittori, two guys coming off wins. Till versus Costa, two guys coming off losses. Just my perspective. Like the fights in general, don't like the matchmaking. Just saying your thoughts.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you on that. I mean, if Costa beats Whitaker, he's going to have to do
something. That sucks for the division.
Yeah, he's going to have to do something absolutely spectacular. Spinning wheel kick Robert Whitaker into a different dimension in like 5 seconds to even get the juices flowing for that rematch. But I like the Till versus Vittori matchup. It's kind of a battle of the best European middleweights. But again, I think it should have been Till versus Costa in terms of obviously they're both coming off losses and whatever. And Vittori's on is he on a 4-fight win streak? I think he's on a 4-fight win streak.
He hasn't lost since losing to Izzy.
Yeah, so I think it's at least 4 or 5 fights that he's had in between then, and he's won all of them. So I mean, he really should be fighting the former champion in the number one contender matchup. But I don't know. Maybe he's been promised a title shot if he beats Till, but I will champion this man through rain or shine or whatever, but obviously he's
Karen Till.
I'm trying to think how many. So he beat Gastelum and then he lost to Whitaker. So he's 1-1 in the division. So
what he does have going for them is Izzy really wants to fight Darren Till solely for the striking matchup. I think the UFC is hoping Darren Till wins, because if Darren Till wins, I think they just give him a title shot right away because they want the Izzy Till fight, because of these four names, Izzy's beaten three of them already. So if Till wins, I think they give him the title shot, but it is what it is. I just wish it was Whitaker, Vittori, because Vittori beating Whitaker, no argument, he gets a title fight. Whitaker already deserves a title fight. And then Costa Till is just fun.
I agree with everything you said, Jose, about the matchups. It's weird. I mean, obviously they're elite middleweights, but them facing each other this time is odd.
Yes.
But the only way I see this makes sense is if the UFC feels that if Izzy beats Jan and wins the 205 belt, he might be tied up. He might be tied up at 205 for a little bit. Even the John Jones thing is out there too. You know, maybe just a random whatever fight versus John Jones. So my thinking is the matchmakers are thinking, even if Costa beats Whitaker and whoever wins between Till and Vittori, those guys could fight for an interim middleweight belt. Or vacant. You're right. Either way. That's the only logic I see in these matchups.
And of course we have Kevin Holland and Brunson coming up too. Can't forget that fight. And then Brad Tavares is now back in the middleweight division too. So a lot of fun scraps. Who does Cannonier fight next? Well, broke his arm. So
assuming he's healthy and coming back at regular time, maybe Brad Tavares.
Yeah, that's a good fight.
I don't hate it. Maybe the loser or winner. Maybe the loser of or winner of the Brunson Holland fight too. Jacare is out there too. You know, he just got knocked out. He's coming off an L. A lot of fun fights. Ian Heinisch Weidman and Uriah Hall are also going to fight soon. Ian Heinisch and Gaslam's coming up. So there's a lot of middleweight fights coming up. My God.
If Uriah Hall can put a whooping on Weidman, man, that's just
Uriah Hall versus Uriah Hall has sold me. Saying if you haven't watched it, go watch Uriah Hall's interview with Mike Heck. Oh man,
it's different. You've
interviewed. Have you interviewed Uriah Hall before, Chizanga?
I have interviewed Uriah Hall before.
It's like it can be brutal at times.
It's the word.
This
I'd like
was
to use.
Like a, this was a Uriah Hall that I've never seen before. He was engaging. He was witty. He was funny. He was like, it was a great, it was like a 30-minute interview, and it's the best 45-minute interview with Uriah Hall, and I was captivated the entire time. So, and yeah. He sold me on a fight against Izzy. He's like, I want to fight that guy. I don't care. It's all about competitiveness with me, so I'm down for that too. But you sure, Uriah, the Cam Davis, the winner of Weidman Hall, I also like.
Anyway, yeah,
we're a little past time, Casey.
Oh, we're way past time, but right. I didn't get, I lost the question. But I want to talk about what do you think about Marina? I lost the question, but I want to talk about her.
Marina
Rodriguez. Yeah. Marina
awesome.
Rodriguez.
Yeah. Awesome. She's incredible.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, I was still shocked at the betting line, even though Marina Rodriguez is actually ranked ahead of her. Amanda Ribas was like a 3-1 favorite or something like that, which to me was a pick'em fight at best. And I picked Marina Rodriguez. I love Amanda Ribas. I think she's a great personality, but I just think Marina Rodriguez as a fighter is just so good. And I think she's got kind of screwed in kind of some very close decisions, but I just love Marina Rodriguez. Yeah.
Marina Rodriguez has beaten a lot of the top strawweights in the world or fought. And I love Amanda, and the strawweight division is the most stacked field. But like, there's a difference from fighting Paige, Randa Markos, Mackenzie Dern, and Emily Whitmire, and then Marina fighting like Tisha Torres, right. Cynthia Calvillo, Carlos Barza. Like she went through murderer's row right away. So shocked at the betting line. I want to see her versus Joanna. It's not going to happen though.
Joanna setting up until she gets a title shot. Yeah. Fans are back.
That's fair enough.
Fair enough.
I get that for Joanna. I think she's earned that kind of sit back and wait, you know.
But she's earned that's true. And obviously the way
the fight was. The winner of is it Dern versus Dern Nina? Fighting. Are they fighting?
Yeah,
Dern and Nina. The winner of that, I like that fight. Or if Tatiana Suarez comes back, that's a fun fight too.
Oh, where is Tatiana?
She's been teasing Summer.
Where is Tatiana? Yeah, we good.
All right, we good. So Chizanga, I don't know if you haven't watched before, the guest of honor gets to plug whatever they want. You can tell us where to find your work. You can say, you don't even have to talk about MMA. You can talk about whatever you want. You just then gave me a great lesson on European football that I had learning new things every day. So plug whatever you want, my man. Floor is yours.
Thanks for having me on, guys, first and foremost. And if you like some of my crazy takes, you can get me on Twitter and Instagram at @Chizanga_Malata. And I wish you all a good week, people.
There you go. Enjoy your non UFC fight week, because we're not going to have, I think, 8 or 9 weeks in a row. Casey, what do you got to say?
Thanks everyone for watching. Thank you, Jose, for all your hard work in Abu Dhabi with the crazy times. And I was there for you. I was waking up at 2 a.m. to run those streams, man. Like, it was crazy, dude.
Yeah,
I had no idea I didn't know what day of the week it was. It was like,
Alex Savage. Yeah. Shout out to Alex Savage too, because she worked every single day with us too.
Alex out behind the scenes. Unfortunately, you don't get to see her face. You get to see mine, but just thanks a lot for everyone. And I know there's no UFC or Bellator this weekend, but there's a great Glory pay per view. It's $20. Watch it. It starts at least on West Coast. I think it starts at noon or 11 a.m. So some afternoon, high, super high level kickboxing. $20 on Glory. I think 3 title fights. Alex Pereira's fighting. Rico's fighting. A whole bunch of other people.
For those of you who aren't aware, Alex Pereira's the guy that knocked out Izzy, Israel Adesanya, in his kickboxing. So he's a big name to watch out for too. He's also making his hopping over the MMA world too. So yes, but you can find this on YouTube, Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all the podcast networks. Chizanga will 100% be back in the future, hopefully, especially when a UK or European fighter is about to make the walk to the octagon, because I love getting that perspective across the pond. But until then, we're out.
Peace.
listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.